smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The Marin Humane Society is buzzing this week, and that is because they are in the midst of Operation Tiny Teacup. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and welcome to the Good Dog Podcast, where today my guest is Kim Snyder, Director of Animal Care and Veterinary Services. We're going to be talking about this current operation, and really more importantly, what puppy mills are, what happens when they are discovered, what animal hoarding is all about, and how you, as a pet lover and a dog lover, can help. So welcome, Kim.
Thank you.
It's good to meet you, and thank you so much for making this time available.
Not a problem.
You've got some very important things going on. So let's go back to the beginning and tell me about what was discovered that has now resulted in this operation.
Well, our involvement started when our Director of Customer Service, Carrie Fennell, happened to be in Arizona at the time of this puppy mill raid. And so I call it happenstance. Originally, they thought they had about 100 dogs, and she called me and asked if she could bring some back on the airplane, and of course I said yes. Having done this numerous times in the past, we've assisted in Hurricane Katrina, which was probably the biggest undertaking we had, and that we airlifted about 500 to 600 dogs and distributed them all through the Bay Area to hold them for their owners. So that gave us a really good idea of what we were up against if we were going to bring other dogs into our community.
Difference being, though, that you were just looking
holding
for foster homes.
Absolutely. And in this case, like others we've done, we've helped with a poodle case in Hollister, and it goes way back. I could name case after case that we've jumped into and had large volumes of dogs or cats come.
But this is a case where authorities discovered dogs being mistreated, or what was it that they found?
What happened was a person that went to purchase one of these dogs, who saw it on the internet, went to purchase one of these puppies, and because the website looks so charming and they look so cute.
Always
and
do.
Price looked right, you know, and
that's the first clue, right?
That's the first clue. And so she went to meet the residents, and they wouldn't allow her on the property. They would allow her to come close to the residents, but only so far. That piqued her suspicion, and they brought her out two or three dogs to look at, and when she asked if she could see others, they said no. And so for some reason, she was highly suspicious, so she reported to the sheriff's department because she just thought something was up. Sheriff's department went out to do a welfare check, if you will, and it was a double-wide mobile home, and when they knocked on the door, they were overwhelmed to find that the trailer itself was filled with 100 dogs and puppies and birds and you name it. The carpets were soaked full of feces and urine. It was in unlivable conditions for anybody, certainly not fit for humans. So at that point, the owners had said to the deputies and then to the responding Humane Society of Southern Arizona that they would surrender the dogs because they were just in over their heads. They felt that it was just too much for them to maintain anymore, and so on and so forth.
Is this illegal?
It's not illegal. It's illegal to the way that they're cared for, yes. It's not illegal to breed. And oftentimes what happens is these breeders start out fairly small, if you will, and then it gets out of control rather rapidly. And then there is a pattern of behavior with people who are considered hoarders. It's becoming more and more common. We're starting to really see it as a mental illness. It is defined as a mental illness because these people that get into this honestly do not see what they're doing wrong. They don't see the neglect, the cruelty. They don't see that their actions are creating a horrible living condition, not only for themselves, but to the animals. They truly do love these animals. They think they're doing everything absolutely right. In this case, of course, the 100 was overwhelming in itself, and rescue stepped up to help, and another shelter locally stepped up to help them. And just on suspicion, they decided to go back the following day with a warrant just to search the entire property. So legally, they needed a warrant to search the entire premises. So they did. They went back with the warrant, and much to their surprise, when they went into a facility that they're describing as a barn, they opened the door, and there were 700 more.
And in 700 more dogs,
mm-hmm,
primarily Chihuahuas?
All breeds. Actually, they were Pomeranians, Pekingese, Chihuahuas, Japanese Chin, Chinese Crested. And we're not talking about housing conditions where they're segregated in little areas where you have Pekingese here and Chinese Crested there, or, you know, two or three dogs in this cage. They were literally everywhere. So,
700 dogs, yeah,
right.
They'd have to be everywhere.
And So when you're looking from a consumer's perspective, I mean, horrific as this is, when you're buying online or even from a pet store, somebody is supplying those animals somewhere along the line. So whether it's a broker or a dealer or however those animals are reaching the pet industry, you really don't know what you're getting. This is a great example of that. All the pictures that were online that many people had a chance to look at, they really were not the puppies that were being sold. They would say, okay, I'm going to sell you X and go into this, you know, pod of 700 animals and pick one that looked as close to that photo as you can get. So, you know.
And there's no way to know if these animals are healthy. They aren't healthy, right?
Well, the majority of the first 100, they had described that first 100 to me, and our director of customer service also saw some of them, because of the inbreeding and because of the conditions, they had serious injuries. They had, genetic problems with missing limbs or toes or, you know, just horrific things that you shouldn't see. And no good breeder breeds that volume. End of discussion. There's just no way. And so when we originally said we would help them, it was not a problem at all. And then the second day when they went back and found the 700 more, it became a full-on, how else can we help? Because this is the people there, and the shelter workers and the community stepped up and really, really pulled together. Shelter workers, I've heard, have worked over 70 hours with no sleep. There are people sleeping at the shelter to help. And it was orchestrated in a way that the animals got emergency veterinary care. There were veterinarians from the community that came over, and they triaged around the night. And every animal, I've got records to back it up, got a full, thorough exam on intake. And kudos to them. That is an enormous amount of work. 800 animals and an exam on every single one of them within a probably 48-hour period. And so they transported them all. They housed them separately. They separated males from females so we could stop the breeding. And then rescue took the majority of the sickest and the oldest and the ones that really needed urgent care now and out of the shelter. That second day, we got involved and offered to help. And we carry stayed, and we decided to rent a van and load it up that following morning and just drive what we could to help them.
How many animals did you bring here?
We were trying to get close to 100 or whatever we could fit in this van humanely, because caring for them in the travel was a huge concern for us. And so I flew a staff person down there to meet Carrie. She flew on the first plane she could get. She went down, and they organized the van in a way that everybody had a nice, you know, movement. They could get, you know, move around, and there was food and water in the crates. There was three times where they stopped and they changed everybody's bedding out. And amazing to drive, 14 straight hours with two people who had already had, you know, a lack of sleep, if you will, from the previous couple of days. They stayed on the road, and they stayed in touch with me. We were on the phone like Velcro. We must have talked, 36 times during the day. And I knew what to expect based on what they were telling me the conditions were. And we began our immediate triage center here. And all you have to do is put out the word to our volunteers and staff. And we have the most wonderful community of volunteers and employees that are beyond dedicated. And we knew that minute we put it out, we'd have more than the help we needed. And that was true. And They left. They were originally going to leave midnight, but they both were very, very tired. So we said, no, you can't get on the road until you're safe and have some sleep. So they left the very next morning at about 7, and they drove straight through, stopping three times, like I said. And they drove here to Marin Humane Society and got here about 9 o'clock. They were met by a frenzy of happy people and happy faces and media galore. And we began unloading and starting that process all over again. The animals again got another, you know, health exam by our veterinarians. We weighed them and collared them with our ID system. And
they're all tiny?
And they're all tiny. The heaviest that I can see on my list as of today, because we have 69. We actually received 69. There are several females that are pregnant, very pregnant. And the majority of the dogs we received were females. So, you know, we're still, we got them in foster homes the following Saturday. We wanted everybody just to sleep overnight and just relax and just make sure that everybody was really healthy enough to go to a foster home the following day. The following Saturday, our veterinarian and I were here, and we assessed and decided, yeah, they can go to foster care where they'll get individualized care. And so we broke them up into small groups, you know, twos, threes maybe, and we had people lining up to take them. And these were fosters that were already in our system, so they're very familiar with our protocols and our standards of care, and they really had a working relationship with us. And, of course, staff all volunteered to take a couple, you know, who wouldn't. And so by that...
How small is the smallest?
The smallest is 1.3 ounces. And, well, actually, that's not even true. That's the smallest that's not a newborn. Our newborn is ounces. We had a mom with three four-day-old babies whose eyes were not open. We had to put them on a gram scale because they were so little. And that the mom is absolutely adorable. And we had another mom with 3 to 4 week-old babies. And she was scared out of her mind. And she wouldn't even eat unless her babies were there. And, you know, talk about Mother Nature and nurturing. And it was just amazing.
So what happens now? You have to find permanent homes for all
of
do.
These. That's not a problem. We have well over 300 applications. And what we're trying to do right now is to find individual needs and take it really slow. The one thing we will not do, no matter how much we're pushed, is put the animal's interest last. We will always put the animal's interest first. And I know that the community is anxious to get their hands on them, and I don't blame them. At the same time, you know, they really need to have more thorough workups. They need to be spayed and neutered. We're not going to spay and neuter them until the little systems are ready for it. We're not going to rush them through and have something go wrong.
So in the days to follow, and even as I've been sitting here waiting to talk to you, you are on the phone with a crisis. A puppy was not doing well.
Right.
Is that what's going to happen? Are more and more various types of physical ailments going to crop up?
We certainly have parasite load that's really, really you know, to be expected in something like this. So parasites in themselves can create a lot of problems. We also, in this breed, these small breeds tend to get hypoglycemic. So that's not surprising that you see that, especially through the stress and what they've been through. You know, fighting for food and water alone. So dehydration was something we expected. And as it goes on, we've seen hernias, we've seen major, major dental disease, and, you know, retained teeth that have to be removed. I'm sure along the way we'll find some orthopedic issues with these small breeds. They tend to have luxating patellas, and the great thing about that is I've got a wonderful relationship with the vet community, and they're calling off the hook to help, and I just love that because everybody will take their, you know, their little bit of amount and spread the wealth, as you will, you know, and everybody feels like they're doing their part, and they are, and we couldn't do what we do without that, and it makes all the difference in the world.
Is this atypical, or does this sort of thing go on in communities all over?
Unfortunately, it goes on in communities all over. Puppy mills are more common than we think, and from an animal welfare person's perspective, it saddens me every time I see somebody with a purebred that says, well, I got it online, and I got it from this great kennel, and, you know, I went on and I researched, and I talked to them for hours, and, oh, they were just wonderful, and they flew the dog out here, and then they tell me where. And I know it was a puppy mill, and they get taken. And the sad thing is these animals have genetic problems from the get-go, or they're sick when they get them.
So what is the way around that for people interested in getting a dog?
Well, honestly, good breeders don't advertise. A good breeder is a word-of-mouth breeder. So if you know somebody who got an animal from a good breeder, stick with that. You know, if you're going into a pet store, I can almost promise you that those animals are coming from a puppy mill facility, because they have to get them quantity. They have to get them in quantity, not in quality. And that's the thing to remember here is they're mass-producing these animals so that the breeder gets a cut, the broker or the dealer who's shipping them gets a cut, the pet store gets a cut, and guess what? The consumer gets the leftover.
And if you're paying the same price that you would pay from a reputable dealer, then clearly you're getting less.
Right. And you're having animals that are inbred, and your AKC papers that everybody thinks so wonderful, how would you know that it even goes to that lineage? How, in this case, is a great example. 700 dogs all running loose. You tell me how they know what one has what papers and who the mom was.
And who's who.
And who's who.
So I would think if you speak with your vet, your local SPCA or Humane Society, you can get recommendations
of
good breeders.
Absolutely. And, you know, I encourage people to go to shelters because these purebreds are everywhere. These
and why do you necessarily need a purebred anyway?
You don't.
I personally never had one.
Right. But if you do, if you really want a purebred, every shelter in the Bay Area, in the state of California, get purebred dogs every single day. Now, you may have to wait a day or two or a week, but if you are doing it right and you want to make a difference, wait.
What about the breed-specific rescue organizations?
Most of them are fabulous, and a lot of them step up to the plate. A lot of them have stricter requirements than some animal controls or humane societies, but they're doing it because they're passionate about what they're doing and because they're finding the right homes. And, yeah, they screen tight, but they're taking animals from neglect. selected situations, and they have the right to screen tight.
Now, Kim, interestingly enough, when I asked you a few moments ago if this was typical, you assumed that I meant our puppy mills and these sort of operations typical. And what I meant, which is now a second question, is the response that you've received from your volunteers, from the veterinary community, is that typical, or do we live in a very blessed area where people are so attuned to animal welfare?
Well, I'll tell you what, I've been here 25 years. And we have grown into a community and a growth of volunteers that is like no other. And whatever we ask for, they give it. And it's typical for us because we're known to do this kind of thing. And we do it because of the support of our volunteers.
You couldn't do it without.
Absolutely not. Absolutely
and
not.
And yet you said in Arizona, the community totally rose to the occasion as well. So
yes,
perhaps this is a trend.
It is a trend. And I think it's a really positive trend. And I think that the public awareness of this kind of thing is creeping out there. So people are starting to really recognize it and report it. You know, people that are suspicious, like this woman who started this, you know, that's what it takes. It takes somebody willing to make that extra little step, you know.
So on top of everything else, I think we can, I mean, is it safe to say that we should encourage people, if you go to see a breeder and you are suspicious, make a phone call.
Absolutely. Absolutely make a
call. And is the sheriff the appropriate place to call?
It depends on your jurisdiction. Sometimes it's an animal control. Sometimes it's a humane society. The more information you can get, the better. The location. Oftentimes what will happen is breeders won't meet you at their residence. They will meet you at an undisclosed location in a parking lot somewhere. It happens here in the Bay Area. We have the Central Valley here in California is a big hub of breeders. And what they will do is they will breed, and then on the weekend they'll advertise in the Chronicle or other local papers, and they will drive them up to the Bay Area so you can pick the puppy you want. If there's somebody's dealing out of the back of their car, there's something very wrong with that.
Interesting information. Now, you have over 300 applications for 69 tiny teacup dogs.
And pregnant ones.
And pregnant ones. And there are many more dogs, clearly, who've been rescued in Arizona and probably other states as well.
Yes.
If good dog listeners are interested in seeing if they can help out, if I have people listening, for instance, who would like to try to adopt one of these dogs, where should we direct them?
Well, the first thing I want to do is encourage people to adopt at a shelter, no matter where or what it is. Because just because these 69 hit the media doesn't mean that the other thousands and thousands aren't just as special. And so, you know, it's interesting that people come out in groves like this when this happens. But the reality is we have chihuahuas every day. You know, every shelter in the Bay Area has chihuahuas every day. So just because it doesn't have Arizona on its name or Hurricane Katrina behind it doesn't mean that those other animals aren't just as special, especially the big dogs right now. I really encourage people to go to their local shelter and look for big dogs because they shouldn't be left behind either. And in fact, we're working on coordinating a possible adventure with some of the other shelters, including Arizona, who right now their big dogs aren't moving. And we do not want those left behind. We recognize the importance of making sure that all of these dogs are represented. So we will do whatever we can to make sure those other big dogs in Arizona are getting help too.
Bottom line, call your local shelter.
Call
if you want to
your local shelter, please. And don't, you know, just there's special dogs from every size and shape in these shelters.
Great. Kim Snyder, thank you so much
You're
for being
so
here today. And thanks for the work you do. Now go home and go to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
GoodDogPodcast.com.